Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, live and in color, it's the Tornado Sandy Pentecow.
And we'll be connecting with Tom in 2 seconds here. As I click on his microphone. Tom.
All right, I'm here.
He's here. He's going to tell us everybody who's going to win this weekend, and he's going to guarantee all bets.
And get a book, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
we got no fly zone, no guests tonight, so we're gonna just go from the hip here, and we backed up news from last week that I didn't get to talk about. But kind of the big news with the UFC last week was the one guy got thrown out for not making weight. Another guy got brought in on a warrant. And Dana White spent the whole day trying to bail him out. So that was kind of an interesting backstory to the event. And I did watch it this time. I'm going to get those results up here in front of me shortly. There's just a lot of backed up news. We're going to do a TNT segment tonight.
So it's all that.
For that. And I'm sorry it's on the fly. I just figured we had to.
I don't know if you got my response email to you guys, but you set that up. But I love TNT. It's dynamite.
Yeah. We're going to hear a little of that dynamite.
I love that song. But, you know, it's actually a great topic, about, the women in boxing and mixed martial arts. I actually wrote, and I'm going back many, many, many years ago, back 90s, wow, when I was in college, the one professor I had, I had a lot of trouble in her classes for my major because she was a feminist. She really hated sports. I had a reputation on the campus. I was an athlete there, and everybody knew who I was, and so she really didn't, and the funny thing is she was my advisor, and she really did not like me that much. So a project we had to do my last semester, and I wrote it with regards to, in sports, particularly boxing. I got an A. First, I got an A in any of her classes.
Awesome. A is for awesome.
Very true.
I'm sure you've heard this about Amir Khan, Tony, but he's fighting the Carlos Molina. I would like to see him not fight. I'd like to see him fight the other Carlos Molina. But this kid is undefeated. And it should be a nice little new trainer set up for him. And everything. So we'll see how that does for him.
He is going to be with Virgil Hunter now, correct? Andre Ward's trainer, right?
Right.
Yeah. And you know what? Virgil Hunter is a very good trainer. Andre Ward's a very good fighter, but you can't train the chin.
Nope. So we'll see what they do to improve his chin, if they have anything to do. But I don't know. I guess you could do a lot of defense training to prevent him from being knocked out, but.
Unless you're perennial Floyd Mayweather that only gets hit with maybe 15% or so of your opponent's punches, you're going to get hit. Amir Khan is a fighter that's going to get hit. So, I mean, you can maybe if he gets hit, say, 300 times or 250 times in a fight and you cut that down by, 50 times, you cut 20% of that out. You're still getting hit 200 times and
Well, he's fighting a guy who's only got 7 knockouts out of 18 wins, only 1 draw.
Oh, that must be a good idea.
And he's not a big puncher, and he is a smaller man, according to this article that I'm reading right now. But Khan has been knocked out by two guys. We'll see if he's ready for this one. 18-0, Carlos Molina. I wanted him to fight the Carlos Molina I saw this, who has a much much bigger record than that. There's a few losses, but he was just on ESPN Friday Night Fights, and I'll tell you, towards the beach. That's what he kept saying. But just pitched a shutout. He won every single round. And granted, it wasn't, you know, any world beater that he was fighting, but that's the Carlos Molina I'd like to see Conor fight. That guy should get way more big name fights. But I think he was done because he's that tough. Here's another one we forgot to, get to last week. Ricky Hatton has revealed that he has a knife planning to commit suicide during his darkest days. Coming back is his opponent, Vyacheslav Zinchenko, on November 24th. So he's got his time on the lam here, and he says, "I was very suicidal and depressed, but I didn't take the full jump. People say they're going to kill themselves and don't go through with it. Then one day they do. Thankfully, I didn't get to that stage. I was waking up in the morning with a knife in my bed. My fiancée Jennifer would come downstairs. I'd be on the sofa with a knife on the floor. I never had the courage to go through." And as far as Zinchenko, he lost his world title back in April when Polymaly stopped him in 9 rounds. And that's his only defeat in 33 professional contests. And it's a tough job for a guy who's been sitting down for a while to take on there. Despite his experience, he's not taking any guys from the bus stop, as Reggie Johnson would say. He's definitely taking a tough test here in his first fight back. Also talking about fighting Kell Brook and Amir Khan himself. So, for the future, he says. It's an interesting story. I didn't know it was that bad for the guy. I knew there was some talk about some drugs and I didn't want him to be a promoter anymore and all that stuff. But here's a little bit of a better story. Rand Barkley, remember him, Tom? For a good cause there. The former world middleweight champion boxer was jobless, homeless, and almost without hope. The people at the Post hear the story reported a little while back. But he fought back, and he's now on the brink of being awarded something more valuable than any of the 5 gym studded belts he won. And it's a great long overdue, he told the Post. "It feels good with... that with everything I've been going through, that this comes as a God blessing for me." Well, basically, he's getting a boxing pension fund. The first ever boxing pension fund.
Well, good for him.
Which is very interesting. The UFC and the MMA community should take note.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time, but they raised something like $2 million at this event. And where else would it be but in Vegas? And, he's one of 10,000 retired fighters across the United States, according to the Retired Boxers. And the WBC commissioned the Rocky statue, has also been tremendously helpful with retired fighters, according to this executive director of the Retired Boxers Foundation. So they helped out with this too, but Rand Barkley. So,
well, it's nice to hear some good news. Yeah. All right.
You tell him in his fortune to expect that?
I said it may not happen overnight, but hang in there. Okay.
Oh, there you go. He's going to remember that.
That's it. Well, yeah, maybe someday we can get him on as a guest and see if he remembers that. Yeah,
we'll just have to call the Post, I guess, and get his information. He'll give it to us. Send out a message or something. But still, he's about the prime heavyweight Travis Brown. Travis?
Yeah.
Something Brown. Marcus Brown?
Travis.
Hello? Travis. Okay. There we go. Travis Brown and Bigfoot Silva. And it was not the fight anybody expected, I don't think. But, man, Silva hauled off with a right hand at the end of that fight that just hit him right on. And Brown actually injured his knee at one point very early in the fight, and you could tell the way he was stepping on it that he was screwed.
Well, that reminds me of that old Larry Merchant saying that this is the theater of the unexpected. And
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Although I hate Larry Merchant.
That's beside the point. But hey, so, even a broken clock is right twice every 24 hours. So.
Sometimes. Yeah.
I remember when I was growing up and I was first really starting to look. I remember watching a lot of boxing matches when I was a little kid, and then I got for a while I got away from it. You know, just goes. You know, getting around like the 8, 9 years old enough, you kind of be trying to be a little bit, you know, not a rebellious teen yet, but a little bit rebellious because my dad was watching the fights, so I didn't want to watch. You know, just being like that. But then as I started getting back into it in my early teens, I remember watching a fight on ESPN. I don't remember the fighter's name. It was a prelim fight. The one guy was like 1-3. I'll never forget it. I remember his record was 1-3. He had the kid in play, box cut afro, and he got a right hand, and his whole body spun around except for his planted foot. He actually broke and dislocated his ankle with that one punch. Because like I said, the guy hit him so hard, his whole body spun except for the foot. And it's like, I'm like, oh shit, his foot's gone backwards. Needless to say, when he went down, he could not get back up.
I like fighting guys with messed up feet. So I won my medal.
Yeah.
And then Brian Price. There.
Yeah. Which teammates would have been going into my fight with him. Instead, I'm teeing off from the guy with the men's head.
I hate to tell you, but it's still cheap.
You want to talk about a cheap medal, Rich? This is the one, and this still burns me up. We had a kid that came out for the Lock Haven team when I was a junior. I was team president that year. We had, I think, Jason Pletcher, who was a teammate of mine, was team captain that year. And, you know, we had, you know, usual young guys come out. So we had this one freshman kid comes out, and he was actually, even though he was a freshman, he was even older than me. He was 21. He was adopted. So his all growth. Growing up, his foster parents babied the shit out of this kid. And we wanted him on the team because he was the guy that could make 112 pounds. So you figure all he's got to do in the regionals is step on the top. He's going to go right to nationals, and now we got another point in the national standings. We're figuring he might develop, you know, because he wrestled a little bit, so he has some athletic background in him. But his parents came up for opening, like, you know, parent weekend or whatever it is, and Dr. Cox had me open up the boxing room. And this kid was in there, and his parents came up with all the headgears, and they wanted to talk about the safety equipment, and I'm like, I mean, because he had an ear problem when he was growing up. The mother grilled me about the headgears and if he'd get ear protection on these things. I'm like, yes, I mean, I box. I'm in my third year of that. I've had no problem. She grilled me. I'm like, this kid ain't going to make it because he's too baby. So we go to our first tournament of the year, and all he does is he steps on the scale and makes weight. They didn't have an opponent for him, and I had to fight a pretty tough guy that was a senior, and we ended up fighting three times. And I ended up beating him once and losing twice. All three fights were close as hell, and that was the one first fight that where he had beaten me by a very close decision. I hurt my left hand in the fight. So they were giving out medals that night only to the winners. Some shows they would give you a gold and a silver. This one they would just give out the gold, just to the guys that won. Well, this kid gets a medal for stepping on the scale. And he's walking up to me, and he's got it around his neck like he just won the Olympic gold medal right there. And he goes, look at my medal. Oh, you lost. You didn't get one. I said, at least I got in the ring and fought.
Yeah.
You know, I said, if I weighed 112 pounds, Jesus Christ. You know?
It's something you hang on your wall and lie about it later, but you don't act like it's the king shit right in front of your father. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I'll never forget, Rich, you might be familiar with the school because it's up in your area. Westfield University, I think it was. Westfield was in Massachusetts. I'm not sure exactly where. First fight I ever won was against the kid from Westfield. I stopped him in the second round. And I remember the show where I beat the kid from Westfield, they had shit brought down, and they didn't have anybody, so they fought exhibition. Both of them fought a kid from Lock Haven, kid Josh Lander, who was a two-time national runner-up. Josh actually knocked both of them out on the same side in exhibition. And two kids, one weighed 112, one weighed 119. Josh usually fought between 119 and 125. Josh knocked them both out. We go to the region. Both of them make weight. Both step on the scale. Both get buys right to the national. So you got two kids at 0-1. They were 0-1. Well, technically not even 0-1 because they lost an exhibition. They were 0-1. They're going to the national. They both fly out. That year was in Colorado at the Air Force Base. They fly out to Colorado. Both of them are in a weight class with only three participants. And both of them draw. So these two guys that were 0-0 are now fighting for the national, and both of them got knocked out in one round. So these guys are now national silver medalists with a record of 0-1 and also getting knocked out in an exhibition. tell me how much that sucks.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Well, we got a couple guys fighting this weekend at UFC 153, Anderson Silva and Ted Bonner, and a lot of people are saying this is a crap fight, you know, Stefan's going to get killed, but this could be his last fight in the cage, period, so he's definitely prepared, and he wants to win, so I kind of like his chances of, pulling an upset. But one of Anderson Silva's past opponents is in this, and I had never heard this story, but it's kind of weird the way he just brings it up like nothing ever happened. But when Forrest Griffin fought Anderson Silva, he was a step slow throughout the fight all the way to the point where he got dropped with a jab. Well, obviously Silva's talent is part of the equation there. On Monday's edition of the MMA Hour, Forrest Griffin said he took the anti-anxiety medication Xanax the night before the fight. And he said, I did a drug test, I think, for Xanax. I had a doctor's prescription. I didn't do it before the fight. I did it the night before. I was nervous and I couldn't sleep. So I don't know why that never came out in the news. I mean, if it was a prescription, yeah, I got a big deal. But it kind of seems like a big deal.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought. Why didn't it come out before? Very interesting.
But anyway, he says, look what happened when I fought Anderson, so I can't possibly get worse than that. I've already seen the bottom, and it wasn't that bad. I made it through. I survived. It's fighting. It's not the end of the world. But I think that's a bigger story than it seems because, I mean, if a guy can take Xanax before a fight, and, you know, no matter how much, you know, longer before the fight, he said he took it. And then, you know, if you test positive for marijuana metabolites and have to sit through a huge suspension. And Griffin didn't get suspended at all from what I read in that. You know, it was like no big deal. He had a prescription. Well, technically, you know, Nick Diaz had a prescription too. You know, he had doctor's orders. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, Dr. Phil's the prescription, but it just seems like, you know, they both have sort of the same effect. They're supposed to calm you down, anti-anxiety. And I did MMA, the Midnight Show on Fox, not Fox, I think it's Spike TV. the MMA show that they do every week. I was watching that last weekend. Nick Diaz and Nate Diaz were both on there, and Nick Diaz definitely has anxiety issues. You watch him in an interview. He is extremely nervous. He's sitting there. He's touching his knees. You know, like very fidgety. He definitely has something wrong with him. So if weed is what it takes, then I don't think you should be punishing the guy like they are. Especially in light of this case, this story. I mean, come on now. You don't get a suspension for taking Xanax?
Yeah, it's just awful strange. And it just seems like if the doctor prescribes it, it's okay no matter what. Well, the whole idea of drug testing is you don't want someone with all these unfair advantages. I mean, the whole thing just seems crazy to me. But having said that, moving on to the main event for this week, I think the question is going to be just can Bonner possibly get the fight to the ground? Is he going to be able to deal with that lateral movement and all that crazy striking that's going to be coming at him? And we'll see what happens if he can get it down. That to me is the question, because I can't see Bonner pulling this off on the feet.
This goes to show you how many, how few actually legitimate opponents are out there for Silva. Who's next? You know, this guy's 15-7, Stephen Bonner. So he's like, you know, he's not that's coming in undefeated or anything like that, looking to you know, take the title and run with it. I don't even think this is for the title. I think it's just it's not an exhibition, but it's I don't think it's a title fight for some reason. So it's going to be three rounds.
Yeah, well, you remember Silva's going up in weight, so his 185 belt is not on the line.
So that's why.
Right.
But he has no way he's fighting Jones, so that's out the window. But so that's either catch weight. It must be at a catch weight then.
No, this is a full scale 205.
Oh. Well, I think might really want to be going out with a bang in this one and might pull something off, but Silva's just so dominant. He's 32 on his record. And he's just beating the best of the best, and it's really hard to even imagine anybody really putting up a fight against him other than John Jones. But he doesn't really want to fight, you know, and I wouldn't blame him because he, as good as he is, he's much. And Jones is just young and limitless with his potential. I don't know if you'll ever see that fight. But a lot of other good fights on this card, too. We got Glover Teixeira, 18-2, fighting Fabio. Not that Fabio, but Fabio Maldonado, 18-5. Dave Pete is on this this card, too. Right, I saw, actually, down in Iowa, fight in person. The time he was so poor, he didn't even have shorts. He had to borrow fight shorts from somebody. And I was 21-4. He actually gave one of the funniest after fight interviews too, because he just kind of plugged his sponsors. One of them was a winery. And he's weird. He's out there. But Dave Herman, he's 21-4 now. He's had a couple of good appearances in the octagon. Fighting Nogueira. Too. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira, 33-7-1. So that's a big step up.
Yeah, I think that's going to have to be settled on the ground. I was reading how Herman made the comment that jiu-jitsu is useless. And maybe with some opponents it might be, but of all the people to say that and wave a red flag, I think this will go to the ground. And my money's on Nog on this one. And on the Maldonado fight, I know that Maldonado has very good hands. I think he has a pro boxing background. The problem is, from what I understand, he's a bit of a slow starter. And against Glover, that could be hazardous. So I question if how long that one's going to go, but I think it'll be a fun fight as long as it's going. But if he's going to come out. And again, some opponents, being a slow starter is not the end of the world, but I just don't think that's a good road for him to go down this time. So we'll see.
Yes, we will. And Fitch back in action on this card as well. He's 23-4 with one draw, and he's fighting Eric Silva, who's 14-2. And that sounds like a very easily matched fight. Fitch has a little bit more experience, but he's been in some tough wars, too, and it's probably taken a big toll on him over the years here. He had a real tough fight with BJ Penn a while back.
I think almost word for word what I said about the other fight. Fitch, a lot of times, is a little slow starter. I think the longer the fight goes, obviously, the better Fitch's chances are. But looking at this Eric Silva, he seems like he's just one of those guys, I like that phrase, on another level. And I've never seen anyone charge out of the gate. I mean, he comes out just like someone, his opponent just flipped off his wife. I mean, this guy is just, he's exciting. And we'll see if Fitch can hang. And they both talked about strategy, and Silva wants to keep the fight standing, obviously. He feels that his biggest problem would be if Fitch can get him down, because Fitch is, with his wrestling skills, is awful good at controlling an opponent. Maybe not the best at finishing him, but awful good at that. So I just think that Silva's the future. I'm not counting Fitch out of this. I'm not in the Fitch hating club like a lot of fans are. I do respect him for what he does, but I think it's Silva's time.
Well, in the fight, I know before the fight, Bruce Buffer is going to be very happy because when I interviewed him, he said that John Fitch was his favorite fighter to introduce.
He said his favorite fighter for what?
Short and quick, John Fitch, you know. There's no. Our old FNU.mypodcast.com, it's gone. But it does still have all the files. All right, we're back, and I have no show window open yet, so can't get Tom back yet, but no, I'll get back with Tom. But what's going on?
What did you say?
Any hard-hitting tornado boxing news?
Boxing, the wonderful world of boxing. Actually, I wanted to, before we get disconnected a little bit ago, I'm going to throw a bombshell on you guys. I actually, and this is coming from me, actually contacted my friends the other night about going out this weekend because of the UFC card. No, don't be shocked. I have to go to a wedding this weekend, and I really don't want to stay that long. So I called my one friend up. I said, listen, man, do me a favor. Let's go see the UFC fights on Saturday. He's like, okay, really? I'm like, absolutely. You just got to come pick me up from this wedding, and we'll go.